Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for spending lunch with us. My name is Candia Richards-Clark. I am the CEO at Bronx Aid Services, Bronx, New York. I was the principal investigator on our Young Men of Color project that was funded by HRSA. It was a special project of national significance. I will talk about that project later on in my talk today. I was a project PI, so I got a salary, so I figured I might as well disclose that. So what will I talk about? I will talk a little bit about Bronx Aid Services, our mission overview of services, why we implemented YMSM programming, a local evaluation of our YMSM project, and then some of the qualitative findings. The pictures that you see throughout the presentation do not reflect any of the participants of our study, but just to break up the slides and show you YMSM programming. I think that BAS is on the forefront of being a social justice organization. Our mission is to really empower and improve the lives and circumstances of adults and adolescents in the Bronx for people who are HIV positive or at risk and who lack the daily resources to meet their needs. We are about 25 years old, and we provide a wide continuum of HIV services, including prevention, case management, legal and nutrition services. We collaborate with a number of organizations in the community, and as well, we are part of some community-based participatory research, including Test and Treat and a Bronx Knows campaign. So what was the background and significance of the whole local evaluation study? In 2001, some of you may remember, CDC published a nationwide study on HIV incidence among YMSM. And New York City really stood out in terms of having the highest incidence of HIV among these young men. CDC later put out a funding announcement, which we applied for and was successful. And we applied to CDC for in response to that FOA simply because the Bronx was emerging as a real problem, the epicenter of the epicenter of the epidemic for YMSM in New York City, and we pointed that out. Some of the structural factors, in fact, besides high incidence of HIV, the Bronx is probably the poorest urban county in the entire United States with a population of over 1 million. And so the social capital and social resources in the Bronx are really poor. About 30% to 40% of people are on some form of public assistance. In addition, the Bronx also reflects what we call a very tangible homophobic community. At the time in 2001, there was an ad that was put out by a gay and lesbian health program that just looked at health services for these young men and was trying to encourage young people to seek health services. And there was a big, uproar from the community, and the ads had to be pulled from the bus shelters. So that's sort of the context we were working with. In addition to religion, heterosexism, hypermasculinity, female sexual context being part of the cultures that these young men were coming from, really portraying a real homo negativity as is represented in some of the literature in terms of the community. And so, young men were finding really anonymous places to meet people and to have sex, usually with sex and drugs in tandem. So in 2004, after receiving that CDC grant, we were well positioned to apply for this HRSA grant and really start to take a deeper look in terms of what were some of the outreach and characteristics that we needed to look at in order to engage young MSM, get them tested, and have them linked to care. So we were funded as one of 8 sites nationally. And as part of the local evaluation, a requirement was to conduct even a more local evaluation to explore sexual and social relationships of HIV-positive men of color who have sex with men. So that was our choice in terms of our study approach. We worked with some researchers from Columbia University. We started off Dr. Miguel Munoz-Laboy from Columbia started the groundwork for the research, and for the past 2 years, 3 years, I think, our local evaluator has been Dr. Jessica Adams Skinner. She's in the audience today. So in terms of the research, we conducted about 21 in-depth interviews with young men who have sex with men using a modified Grundy theory approach. And the qualitative data was assessed using QSR and Vivo 8. And the quantitative data was analyzed using SPS 17. What I'm presenting today was some of the results that came out, not as intentionally as part of the study, but emerging themes that came out. And I really want to share with you exactly in the words of the young men why we thought they were coping and they were resilient. So in order to be eligible for the study, they had to be part of the SPINS multi-site, be 13 to 24 years of age, be HIV positive, and had to express an interest in participation. The mean age was about 22. Most of them were African American or Latino. Had some high school, but you know, education was on the lower end of the spectrum. Were unemployed for the most part, had some kind of public assistance. And most of them lived in their own place of parents or guidance. And we thought that housing stability probably was tied to the fact that they were HIV positive and were receiving social services and support. Most of them identified as being gay or homosexual or bisexual. And so there was a strong identification with their sexual identity. And you know, that plays out later on in terms of their own resilience. So what were the emerging themes? Although we set out to look at coming out, roles of partners in their relationships before and after they were HIV positive, you know, we were really surprised to find that these young men were talking to us in really assertive terms about who they were and where they wanted to go. So they were coping strategies. I'm coping the best way I know how. Some of them were meditating, listening to music. Being around the other HIV positive people also made them feel that they were coping with both their HIV and their sexual orientation. There was positive thinking and optimism. You know, God still blesses me and I'm gonna just keep putting a positive energy and positive things are gonna keep coming back to me. I'm pretty sure by the time I'm 24, they're going to have a cure for all this. And a lot of them, as I'll show you later, had very specific plans and dreams for the future. Over 65% of them expressed some type of desire to have children in the future. Most of them talked about marriage and were very specific about their career and their interest in professionalism. Over 80% of them disclosed either to a female family member or a female friend, usually a mother or sister or female friend. All of them were in care or in a program. So sharing with you what we thought were coping language. I don't really talk to my family about my sex life. I'm going to do what I want to do. My family doesn't really influence. Not just them, but anybody's opinion don't really influence me but my own. And that was in response to a question of whether their family support really influenced which partners they selected. And we found this for most of the participants, surprisingly, that they thought that their family's influence in terms of who they selected for a partner was not very important. Normally, it's not very important. Even before they were HIV positive, there seemed to be some self-preservation, knowing the environment and the context they were living with. They said, I don't really talk to my family about my sex life. I talk to them here and there, but sometimes, you know, and everything like that, but they don't even know that I'm HIV positive. In the literature, there is some discussion around early signs of resilience among adolescents, and I think some more needs to come out in terms of how adolescents expressing themselves given the context in which they live. And they were saying, by the time I got to the program, I was okay with myself. I was perfectly fine with myself. Another one said, this is my life. Unless you're giving me money in my pocket, paying my rent, paying my bills, making sure I got both sneakers and clothes on my back, don't say blip. other early signs of what we thought was resilience. Regardless of what people say and think about me, I know who I am deep down inside. So regardless if I'm being called a, if I'm being called anything, I know deep down inside that I'm a sophisticated gentleman, that I like the same-sex preference, and that's all that is. Desire to have children, what exactly did they say to make us come up with this same? Even though I'm HIV positive, I still want kids. I would like to eventually adopt someone. All right, do you see yourself getting married in the future? Yes, that's what. I also want to have a daughter. They want to live longer. People don't stop living their life because of cancer or stuff like that. My sister said to me, you're not going to make yourself upset and be like some of the kids that's committing suicide because they feel like nobody appreciates them and their sexuality. And I said, no, I have too much to live for, you know, to just destroy my life like that. And here's some of the career goals. Psychologists want to have their own beauty parlors all over the United States. They want to finish school. And said, I'm going to be successful, like as long as I have my education behind me, as long as I keep striving and getting to what I want to get at, I'm going to make it. Also consistent with people who receive a HIV positive diagnosis, there's some behavior change. So many of them talked about, I'm having a lot safer, more safer sex now than I had before. I only have safe sex now. Very assertive and also considerate, and it's sort of exhibited a certain level of maturity for their age in terms of being concerned, well, if I have a child, I don't want somebody else to become HIV positive, and if I get married, I don't want to infect somebody else. So there was a sense of maturity there as well. Connection to a female family member, like I said, was pretty predominant among that group. So there are some implications, we believe, for future research in terms of if there were a screening tool that were to be developed for young men, what are their connections with the females around them? What are their connections to a program or to a group? Because they definitely negotiate on a daily basis around their sexuality, around their HIV positive status, and they find ways to cope with all of that. So studies geared toward MSM of color need to be aware that in spite of the societal and structural barriers, homophobia, poverty, heterosexism, and all these isms and stigma and discrimination, YMSM are incredibly resilient. So programs and interventions should find ways to encourage connection with female members, help YMSM pursue their careers, discuss same-sex marriage and having children, facilitate them socializing with other young people like themselves, encourage journal writing, listening to music, and everything else, so that they would be able to say things like that. And that was a poster that was developed from one of our programs that ran for 6 weeks in the bus shelters in the Bronx. So we had come a long way in terms of the ads being taken down. Now they were up in the community and there was not any resistance. But I did want to mention that in the recent media, we know that there was this hate crime in the Bronx against young YMSM. And so part of our job is to continue the advocacy, creating a safer place for all of them. Thank you.